Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like the entire show commercial-free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
A wrestling whodunit angle has captured the hearts, minds, and dollars of fans all over the world, and it had nothing to do with Roman Reigns, Eric Rowan, or a script. Welcome, everyone, to Sunday Night's Main Event, Canada's premier wrestling radio show, broadcasting on TSN Radio and News Talk 1290, and coming at you all across the world at SundayNightsMainEvent.com. My name is Jason Agnew. It's a rare solo Agnew edition of the show this week, with a myriad of guests joining me. In our first hour, it's the return of the Triple Threat segment with two of my favorite wrestling personalities, former WWE official Jimmy Corderas and Todd Martin from Pro Wrestling Torch. Then in our second hour, we'll check in with Dave Meltzer for the Wrestling Observer Insider to get the scoop on a huge WWE writer shakeup. Plus, we'll preview Clash of Champions in a six-pack challenge between current champion Bartender Dave and number one contender and All Elite Weekly co-host Joe Aguinaldo. They'll select their picks and preview next weekend's WWE pay-per-view, plus turnbuckle trivia and a short AEW editorial. It's all to come, but first things first, we're going to take a break and then come back to get you caught up on a very busy week in the world of wrestling and MMA. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Hey there, I'm Morty Jenkinson. When I'm not coaching the offspring in soccer, baseball, or wrestling, cutting the lawn, or playing taxi, it's shirts off, Crocs on, slather on the SPF 100, fire up the barbecue, and crank up the Bob Seger while lounging in the kiddie pool, of course. Ryan Reynolds wishes he was me. Over my dad body pilsner from Great Lakes Brewery, now available at your local LCBO.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Let's get you caught up on all the news that happened this week in wrestling and MMA. And the biggest story of the week is actually a whodunit storyline. And definitely not involving Eric Rowan and a missing doppelganger. It is, of course, the case of Chris Jericho's missing AEW championship. Now, here's what happened according to the Tallahassee police report that was filed on Tuesday. Jericho stated he arrived at the Millionaire Club airport terminal and placed the belt inside his rented limousine. The limo driver shuttled Jericho to the Longhorn Steakhouse for dinner. Jericho stayed at Longhorn while the limo driver returned to the airport. Now, according to the report, Jericho had taken the wrong luggage from the airport and the driver took it back to the terminal. Jericho had left the belt in the limo in a case. Now, when the driver picked up Jericho from the restaurant, the belt was missing. Fast forward a couple days and details surface about a 41-year-old man named Frank Price. According to an article in the Tallahassee Democrat newspaper, Frank Price claimed he and his wife were driving home on Sunday night from a day of scalloping with friends on his birthday. That's nice and weird. When he and his wife noticed a velvet bag in the middle of a turn lane, they picked it up, and when they got home, they were surprised to find a wrestling title belt, which they thought was just some fan's replica belt or something, not realizing that it was actually worth nearly $30,000. They put it up on the Tallahassee Lost and Found on Craigslist. Once Price was made aware of the situation, he brought the belt into police, and the owner of the limousine company gave him a measly $200 reward. Now, Price told the Tallahassee Democrat that he doesn't think the title belt was actually stolen. He said, quote, "I think what happened is they just set it on the trunk of the limo, and it just fell off." So there you have it. The title has been found. It is back in the hands of Chris Jericho. He is probably still lounging around in his hot tub, drinking a bit of the bubbly, which is now the most well-known phrase in wrestling, the bubbly. Let's move along. But another story about Chris Jericho as we do move along, as on Thursday it was announced by Sports Illustrated that Chris Jericho will defend his world title against Cody at Full Gear on Saturday, November the 9th. The pay-per-view is taking place at the Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. Jon Moxley versus Kenny Omega will also take place on that card. And yes, StarCast 4 has been announced for that weekend. In Ring of Honor news, or perhaps in this case, Release of Honor news, Sports Illustrated's Justin Barrasso reported Tuesday that Marty Scurll's Ring of Honor contract is up this November. I wonder if it's before November 9th. Yet another WWE draft is on the way. I've talked on the show about how when SmackDown moves to Fox, the wildcard rule is thankfully supposed to be tossed out the window, and wrestlers are supposed to be exclusive to their brands, as are announcers. So with that in mind, as a way to try to maintain the expected big audience of the Fox premiere 1 week earlier, the WWE draft will begin on SmackDown on October 11th. The Raw draft will then take place on Monday, October the 14th. No word on how NXT will fall into this, but we'll check in with Meltzer about that later in the show, as well as the major writer shuffle backstage at the WWE that took place this week. Remember, if you're listening via podcast right now and you'd like to get the weekly Dave Meltzer portion of the show in the second hour, you need to become a patron member. It's only $1 a week and you get the full show commercial-free plus all other podcasts, including the Midweek Markout, All Elite Weekly, the Trivia Show, and we have a new two-hour Dan Lavransky music show on the way as well. That will be weekly and I'll give you details on it next week when Mouth joins me live here in the studio. Of course, you can become a patron at patreon.com/SNME Radio. Back to the news. WWE is presenting Raw and SmackDown from Madison Square Garden this week, along with Steve Austin appearing on Raw to preside over the contract signing and Undertaker appearing on SmackDown to preside over his nostalgia pop. The WWE also set up a significant tag match for Monday night, which involves the four horsewomen of the WWE teaming up and facing off. It's going to be Becky and Charlotte taking on Bayley and Sasha. Also on tomorrow night's show, we're getting Rey Mysterio versus Grand Metalik and AJ Styles versus Cedric Alexander. Some messy scheduling notes from the WWE in regards to the move of NXT to the USA Network. It seems as though WWE was so dead set on getting the jump on AEW, they failed to take into consideration what USA Network might have going on. As in the USA series Suits? Yeah, you know the one Meghan Markle used to be on? Yeah, so the penultimate episode and the series finale take place on September 18th and 25 at 9 p.m. And you can be sure USA is not moving those. So with that in mind, on those two nights, the first hour of NXT will air live exclusively on USA. The second hour will be exclusive to the WWE Network. And then that first hour is going to be able to be viewed on demand right after it airs. What a mess. Essentially, if you're only getting it on WWE Network, like us here in Canada, you have to watch the second hour first if you want to watch it live, and then go back and watch the first hour next after the... It's... You know what? I'm confused by it already. It's really annoying. So really, October 2nd is the first two-hour live episode of NXT on USA, and that coincides with AEW's debut on TNT. Oh, and the NXT debut on USA, the one-hour version that is, on October the 18th, Velveteen Dream will defend his North American title against Roderick Strong. I guess that'll happen in the first hour of the show because it has to be on USA. Once again, very confusing. Hopefully, I didn't confuse you more. Speaking of confused, in old man Ric Flair news, the man is mad about the man. Yeah, so Rick went on a rant to TMZ about threatening to sue WWE for Becky Lynch's use of the phrase "the man," claiming he's been using it in a wrestling context for many years and owns the trademark to be the man, you've got to beat the man. He wants to be compensated for the use of it. WWE lawyers have blown him off. Now, in my opinion, this story is ridiculous. Later in the week, TMZ also put out a report with Flair claiming he signed a deal with Adidas. Oh, so he'll get money there. Flair also stated he plans to make Nike the number two brand, saying it's no longer Air Jordan. It's all about Air Flair, and he can't jump. Oh, boy. Moving along. Hiro del Fantasma has signed with WWE and joined the Performance Center. Real name Jorge, or George Bally. He is the son of Lucha Libre star Fantasma. Bally started his career in 2000 and wrestled for CMLL until 2013, when he jumped to AAA. He lost his mask to LA Park at last year's Triple Mania. Now, fans of Lucha Underground may remember him as King Cuerno. So naturally, with all that experience, he needs to be at the Performance Center. Yeah, he and Santana Garrett hanging out at the Performance Center when they need these names on TV. I mean, hopefully NXT does open up some space to get people like this on television. Speaking of the Performance Center as well, a former Impact Knockout, Scarlett Bordeaux, was also at the Performance Center for a tryout. No word on signing, but come on, I think WWE would be smart to do that. Let's actually check in with Impact here. We don't normally do this, but a couple things popped up this week. Johnny Swinger, remember him? That's former WCW wrestler, and Ron Hutchinson trained Johnny Swinger, has signed with the company and debuted at the tapings last night in a 90s gimmick. The company also set up a Ken Shamrock versus Moose match for Bound for Glory. They teased Tessa versus Tennille Dashwood for the Knockouts Championship. And with LAX gone, Conan has been moved to working with an up-and-coming team known as RVD and Rhino. Yeah. The main event of Bound for Glory looks to be Sami Zayn versus Impact Champion Brian Cage. And considering Cage's recent injury issues, I wouldn't be surprised if Callahan wins. And hey, maybe they'll do a title unification with Tessa Blanchard, because they've already worked together and she can win both belts. Could happen. Just saying. Fantasy booking. Moving on. Noah's Naromichi Marufuji will also be wrestling at Bound for Glory, and Joey Ryan was at the Impact tapings on Friday night and filmed some vignettes. His penis was also there. Former UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez will make his pro wrestling debut on U.S. soil at AAA's Invading New York event on Sunday, September the 15th. It'll be in a six-man tag as he teams with Psycho Clown and Brian Cage to face off against Taurus Texano Jr. and Rey Escorpion. And speaking of Kane, here's a few actual MMA notes. Yesterday was UFC 242. It was a show during the day here in North America, since it emanated from Abu Dhabi. In the main event, Khabib Nurmagomedov defeated Dustin Poirier to retain his title and unify the lightweight titles. There's now talk of Khabib most likely fighting Tony Ferguson, or they can make some money by putting him in the ring against Conor or GSP, or maybe Conor and GSP just fight one another, as per my rant a couple weeks ago. Dana White stated that BJ Penn is done fighting in UFC. This comes after our last report of BJ getting into two bar fights in one day in Hawaii. And finally, Bellator has signed MMA free agent Chris Cyborg to what Scott Coker called the biggest contract in women's MMA history. Coker also stated Cyborg will get an immediate title shot in Bellator. That wraps up our week in wrestling news. Try to get you all caught up there in a quick little ditty. We are going to take a break and then come on back. The return of the Triple Threat is next. Todd Martin, Jimmy Corderas, myself. Stay with us. It is Sunday night's main event.
Yeah, I'm going to take my horse through the old town road. I'm going to ride till I can't no more. I'm going to take my horse through the old town road. I'm going to ride till I can't.
I'm Dan the Mouth of Rancid.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old folks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/snmeradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old folks. Tough guy!
Is the Triple Threat.
There's gonna be a Triple Threat.
Triple Threat.
Triple Threat match.
On Sunday night's main event.
Well, it's certainly been a while since we have done this, but it is Triple Threat time, where I am joined by two gentlemen who also follow this industry in depth and have been paired up before on this segment. First of all, he is a former WWE official. Now you can see him on Aftermath and occasionally on WWE Watch Along, like when they were up here for SummerSlam. Jimmy Corderas, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm glad you're doing this again. This is awesome.
Yeah, here and there. When we have 5 weeks in a month, I definitely do this. And I'm pairing you up with a gentleman that you have battled in this segment many a time. From, of course, Pro Wrestling Torch, and along with that, Sure Dog, and the LA Times blog, Todd Martin. Welcome back, Todd.
Yeah, it's good that you haven't been listening to people that say, get rid of the triple threats, just go with one-on-one. So it's nice.
There you go. All right, guys. Hey, let's talk about the hot topic of the week, and that, of course, is Chris Jericho losing the AEW belt, or maybe it just being misplaced with the limo driver, et cetera, et cetera. Jimmy, I wanted to start with you here. I mean, you've worked with Chris in your career. How not surprising was this reaction from Chris Jericho when this went down for you?
The beautiful thing about Chris Jericho is he's able to take any situation and try and spin it into a positive, no matter what it is. And in this situation, I know a lot of people are out there thinking, oh, it's some elaborate work by Chris Jericho. He's working everybody. This is, you know, I think he took a genuine situation and in typical Chris Jericho fashion, turned it into something creative and different and had fun with it. And obviously good news. You got the, we can say belt on here. Right?
I think we can say belt. Yeah, that's okay.
He got the AEW belt back, which is at the end of the day is a good thing. But man, Chris is just so good at reinventing himself. And obviously in wrestling, everybody talks about the evolution of the business. Chris evolves himself, which is really cool.
Yeah. And Todd, you know, to see this happen via the brain of one person, what does it say about, you know, current wrestling and or maybe WWE programming, which is lined with writers but can't make a storyline like this work?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a funny little story over the past week, and I'd like to see some more with it. I've enjoyed what's happened, although obviously it wasn't something that was planned in advance. As far as like the idea of scripting things out and planning things out in advance versus just sort of rolling with things, I mean, I think one of the charms about wrestling has always been that it was a business built on, you know, just sort of extemporaneous reactions to situations. And I think so many of the moments that we enjoy most as longtime wrestling fans revolve around people reacting to situations that come up. And you'll put up a framework, you know, a basic setup, you know, like this is the way that things are going. And the wrestlers will know that. And then they'll play off of that. No, you know, they'll make, you know, they'll deliver interviews based around that. They'll have matches based around those stories, and then they'll just sort of fill in all the details. I think that creates a much more rich life than a product that's dictated from the top, where you plan every little bit and plan all the words out from beginning to end in general. And particularly if you have somebody that's doing that, that is apt to switch directions very frequently and is erratic in their behavior.
Yeah, and as far as the Jericho side of things goes, you know, he's a person that is naturally caters to something like this. He does have a brain for the business and is good at improvising, so we've seen him take full advantage of it. Jimmy, I want to go back because, you know, there's a lot of discussion now about this Wednesday night war that is going to happen, and you really have two distinct styles of putting together a wrestling show, one with AEW going with no writers, and then you have NXT, which is probably getting more writers now after going to USA. Jimmy, when you were in WWE, how present were the writers?
Well, they were always present, but at the end of the day, they interacted with talent, you know, as much as they could. But at the end of the day, it was the producers and, you know, and Vince who were the final say. So for me, this Wednesday Night War, I don't know if they're going to add, like you said, that many more writers to NXT. I think they will add some staff because they are going to 2 hours as
right.
every week as opposed to one tape. But I think the structure will be somewhat similar. I mean, the challenge for AEW for me is going to be you need to have some kind of structure going into television. You can't book it like a pay-per-view, for example. You know what I mean? TV
yeah.
has to be structured differently. You have to have you know, time out your break spots and the flow of the show and that kind of stuff. It's that's going to be the challenge for them, and it's going to be a learning process. They will get there. I have no doubt that they will eventually figure it out. But there's going to be, I think, for them, some learning, not learning, growing pains.
Yes, growing pains. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I've told everybody, I want them to succeed because this is a great time for wrestling. There's a lot of interest all around. I just hope that they are willing to learn and not just stick to their guns and say, no, we know what we're doing right. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think that attitude is a lot of WWE, and you have seen AEW adapt. But, you know, you're going forward, and you mentioned it right there, Jimmy, that they're now going to weekly television. And along with that, they've also announced their next pay-per-view, Full Gear, on November 9th. Todd, is that too soon for another pay-per-view?
I don't think so. I mean, I if I'm sort of looking at, like, the optimal time, maybe I'd go into December. But, I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to do one more show before the end of the year, I think they likely looked at different different dates and saw what was, you know, happening from different other companies, because there's such a full schedule now, and just decided that was a better time. I don't have a problem with it. I assume that they've thought it out and come up with a plan for why they're doing that versus, 4 weeks later or 6 weeks later.
Is Cody the right guy to be in there, Todd, with Jericho?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two questions. I mean, one is, like, given the situation that they're in right now, is Cody the right person? And I think the answer to that is definitely yes. I mean, they had Omega lose a couple matches.
Mm-hmm.
Cody's been booked strong. He's been getting over well. He is he's very popular with the audience against Jericho, who's been booked as the top heel. So I think it very much fits with what they're doing right now, and I think it's a good choice. I was surprised that there was some backlash to it, because it seemed to be the obvious direction, I think a perfectly fine direction. In terms of, like, sort of taking a step back and, like, saying, like, who is the best person to put in your title match for the first show, I mean, I'm still okay with Cody versus Jericho, but my thought process going into this whole thing, and this is as much about Jericho as it is about Cody, was that when you're introducing the product at the very beginning, you want to have something that really feels as different as possible to send the message, you know, we have a different vision, we're a different thing. And I think there are going to be a lot of fans out there that might potentially give a try to AEW. And I would want, if I'm there, to be focusing on a few fresh faces that are the focus of things. And when your world title program is a person, two people that have been WWE in the past, I don't know if that would be my optimal setup, even if I think it's, you know, I don't think it's a big negative, if much of a negative at all.
I think you do bring up a good point, and that was actually going to be my next question. You know, Cody Rhodes and Chris Jericho both really came into prominence in North America for their time in WWE, and now we have those two in the main event for the first title defense. Jimmy, do you think this takes away from the new identity of AEW, or have they distanced themselves enough already?
I think I could see how people would say that, you know what, here we go again. It's two ex-WWE guys in the forefront of this new promotion. But at the same time, it's almost like, look, here's these two guys that were in WWE. Now they're over here. The handcuffs are off. They get to be who they are, not who, you know, the WWE's perception of who they are is. So now they get to really show the audience what they are capable of. I think maybe that's the attitude that they're thinking here. At least I'm assuming, of course, and you know what happens when you assume sometimes, but that's the vision I'm looking at. I'm looking at, here we go, we got Cody being Cody. He's not being Stardust.
Mm.
It's a complete left turn from what he was doing in WWE and probably what he wanted to do in WWE. And with Chris Jericho, like I said before, the master of constantly reinventing himself, I think this is good going in because it gives you name recognition for their initial television show, might bring eyes to the product, and then you let your other guys that may not be so familiar with the audience shine on this first show. You know what I mean? By bringing guys in with people they already recognize.
All right, let's move away from AEW here and flip over to WWE, and I'm going to give you both the chance to give me an explanation here. Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, Eric Rowan doppelganger. Can someone please explain to me, Todd, we'll start with you, what is this storyline? What am I, as a fan, supposed to be reading into this?
I'm going to take a pass on that opportunity. It's a very generous one you've offered to me. It, you know, it's funny. Like, I watched, like, the last few weeks of this thing, and I, you know, after watching the show 2 weeks ago, I thought, this is just so stupid. Why even bother with this? Like, it's just, I'm not going to expend time thinking about like why this is dumb or thinking about where they're going, or it just, you know, like it's so obviously stupid and not well thought out as they're going along that like, why even bother? And, I do a podcast with Wade Keller at the Porch every week, and Wade is really worked up on it. He's sort of like the opposite. Like he's like explaining all of these, like, you know, like all of the inconsistencies in it, which were completely valid. And all the problems of the storyline. And my thought process is just like, you know, like whatever, you know, it's a dumpster fire. Just move on and they'll get through it.
Well, I mean, ultimately what this is supposed to lead to is Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. I mean, that was at least what it was supposed to lead to. Even at SummerSlam, that match was supposed to happen and they pushed it off. And now we have to sit through Roman Reigns and Eric Rowan, who was doled out as what looked like a main eventer at that last SmackDown. Jimmy, tell me, what as a fan am I supposed to take out of this storyline?
I wish I had an answer for you. I'm kind of like, as the guy who tries to be the glass half full kind of guy.
You definitely are, Jimmy. Yep.
You know, at first I was like, hey, I like the idea that they're going to drag this out a little bit. We're going to take some time and develop a story here in an era where everything gets rushed along and the patience is very thin on the fans. And then the week that they showed the doppelganger, they lost me, unfortunately. I mean, like I was buying it. I was going, listen, this is good. Drag it out. I want a good long story and stuff to make sense. But when the doppelganger showed up, they lost me on that. And after that, everything else was kind of like, eh. So, you know, I like you said, I'm pretty sure it's going to Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns somewhere, whether it's the jealousy angle by Daniel Bryan that the WWE chose Roman Reigns as the chosen one over him, especially since Daniel Bryan considers himself superior and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, like I said, they kind of lost me along the way.
Hey, listen, if that had been the storyline, that would have been great if they had already solved it. They really lost me when it was, well, number one, the initial shoot was terrible. And then when you introduce a doppelganger and then he's just gone the next week and there's no justification for that introduction or removal, it just, you know, it blows my mind. Clearly, this is not going well and is a giant waste of time, as Todd said. Let's talk about the Bayley heel turn. Todd, I have to admit, I was surprised at how much the crowd was into this on Monday.
You mean in terms of the positive reaction?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a thing that gets brought up from time to time when we get these reactions to turns. And there's sort of two, I don't know if I'd say schools of thought, because there's sort of, I think they can coexist, but, like, one thought process is, like, this is just sort of what wrestling has become. You know, like, that the wrestling fans are so into the idea of a big angle. That when you have a big angle, they just sort of react positively to it, regardless of whether they like the people that's like the person that's getting turned on, whether they dislike the person that's doing the turning. They're just excited that something big is happening. Then on the other side, you can say, and I'm sympathetic to this point of view, that it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. That's sort of a byproduct of the way they've been doing things. And it's not necessarily an indictment of the individual characters of like, oh, they don't like Becky Lynch. They're not that into Becky Lynch. Although, you know, I think to some degree it might suggest that. But I mean, my thing is more just that if you tell long-term storylines where you make people really invest in the characters, you can get people to really care about what happens to the characters. And, you know, I look at what New Japan had done a few weeks ago where Kenta turned on his longtime friend and mentor of sorts, Shibata. And nobody anywhere was reacting positively to that because the way that they've constructed the characters, you bought into the characters, you understood the characters. It felt like they had a moral consistency to them as opposed to just sort of being a pawn in a game. And thus when it happened, it's like, oh, I don't want to see that character do that. And with Bayley, I think people think of WWE in general because they do so many angles, they do so many turns, and the logic isn't always there, and they don't plan things out. The Bayley thing, I don't think they've really done much at all to set it up. But if you'd spent 2 months on it, where like you gave people reasons why they liked Bayley, and they also showed signs that she was going to do something that they didn't want her to do, like an old school wrestling angle. By the time you got to the point where she made the choice that fans perceived to be the wrong choice, I think you get a much more uniform negative reaction to it. I think when instead it's like, okay, we're going to pull the trigger on a heel turn this week, boom, heel turn, people are like, oh, something exciting. And I think having more cohesive long-term stories where you have a sense of consistency to the characters, you can get people invested back in the characters and the stories, and they'll react more with the way that you're trying to teach them to, rather than cheering the heel turns, this is awesome, rather than investing in who's winning and losing, that sort of stuff. And I think that, unfortunately, needs to be a long-term process at this point, because fans have gone very far in that direction. I don't think it's a positive one for the upward trajectory in terms of what you can do with the audiences, in terms of how many people you can bring in. Because I think wrestling fans are sort of used to this thing in a certain way. You know, you've got them, but I think to bring in a larger audience, you want to tell stories that people relate to and understand. And it's not just like, oh, here's an exciting chapter in the story. It's more like, I care where the story is going.
Yeah, and that was a lot. Todd, you got some passion in regards to that and storylines there. Things are changing constantly in WWE. I mean, it's a drop of a dime, and that is a consistent problem that we talk about all the time. In regards to Bayley, I mean, the history that was built there was with Sasha. And Jimmy, if anything, I thought the justification for the, I guess it wouldn't have been a heel turn because Sasha came back as a heel, but breaking those two apart and having Bayley turn on Sasha is more so of what I expected, because if we are looking at this storyline, Sasha's the one who left her, and now she's just siding with Sasha again. So that's why I was surprised, not necessarily in a good way, though, on Monday for me.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised as well. I mean, like Todd said, we saw little hints of things from Bayley, like pushing Charlotte off the chair, and you're going, that's not very babyface,
mm-hmm.
you think. But with regards to the reaction she got when she finally did lay out Becky with the chair, I mean, and you know, I hate to point the finger at fans, but it just seems to me that the fans in North America, and I know Todd brought up the Japanese audience, I think they watch wrestling differently than they do here in North America. I mean, like, yes, everybody's quote unquote in on it. We know it's not an actual sport or competition, but for some reason, in my opinion, it seems like the audience in Japan absorbs the product differently. They watch it differently. They have a different appreciation for it. And you can point fingers at storylines not being told correctly or whatever. But at the same time, I think the fans here in North America are constantly overly analytical when it comes to, you know, critiquing stuff. I mean, like, trust me, there's a lot of material out there to critique. that's what I do, right? I try to do it in a nice way, but at the same time, you know, sometimes we just need to sit back and relax. I don't know if I'm going off topic here again, as like I do sometimes, but it's just that, you know, I think a lot of the positive reaction on with the Bayley turn was like people saying, I knew it. I saw it coming. Yes, I was right. As opposed to, oh my goodness, why did she turn? You know, does that make sense?
Well, I think part of the Bayley turn, though, might have been what Todd was alluding to, is that, you know, you're more so common WWE fan as opposed to, let's say, the AEW or the Japanese fan, which are more into the product and into the storylines. But the common WWE fan shows up to see a Monday Night Raw and then, oh, this happens. One character turns on another and hits her with a chair. Yay! And there was a big cheer for that. I get the feeling that that is kind of the disconnect, where you do have the fans that are more involved, but maybe the fans that were cheering were the ones that were just there and like the big moment, as opposed to thinking what effect that big moment actually has on storylines. And I think, Jimmy, what you brought up about fans looking at wrestling differently actually goes into my next story and next topic, because I want to talk a bit about Bray Wyatt. And Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, shall we now say, is set to challenge either Seth or Braun at Hell in the Cell. I have watched Bray Wyatt, we all have, going from a character that was very interesting with very cool promos and a very cool entrance, and now evolving into whatever this new character is. But no matter what Bray Wyatt has done, there has been a disconnect between Bray Wyatt and fans once he gets into the ring. And you talked about how North American fans are taking in wrestling differently, because I think what they wanted of this character is a promo and an entrance, and then once he gets in the ring, they don't care. And I think we're seeing this again with The Fiend. And now The Fiend is set up to be in the main at Hell in the Cell. And I think, Todd, this is a recipe for disaster.
Well, I agree with you in part, and I disagree with you in part. I definitely agree with your premise. I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to the long-term disconnect that comes with Bray Wyatt matches. And I think it's less about the character and more just about the performer, that he's not as dynamic a wrestler in terms of being able to have very exciting matches as he is a storyteller and a promo. And that's caused problems for him in terms of the matches over time. And I think it's going to cause problems now. And I think that's going to be an issue with this Fiend character going forward. But I draw the different conclusion about this, this Hell in the Cell than you, because of that, in that I don't think that the level of interest in the Fiend and Bray Wyatt right now is likely to be sustainable because of the fact that those matches tend to, you know, not have the, you know, the level of excitement a lot of other things do. So I think it's a good idea to just go to a big match immediately and, you know, try to get the maximum that you can out of this character. And so, like, having in the Hell in a Cell match for the title, I feel like there's going to be a lot of interest in that match, and that you're going to be able to take advantage of what they built with the Fiend. And if we get what I think you're expecting and what I'm expecting, which is a match with a lot of bells and whistles that, you know, doesn't necessarily work as well as we're expecting, well, hey, at least you got a lot of interest going into it, which to me, the goal of pro wrestling is to build interest in individual matches.
I also look at the psychology of the Bray Wyatt character, and I don't think it's a character that necessarily needs a championship. You know, we had characters in the past, whether it be Killer Khan or Kamala, Savage-like characters, which Bray tends to go into, who are motivated by something different. Even someone like Jake the Snake, motivated by something different, just tormenting their opponents, doesn't necessarily mean that they need to be thrown in, like, not motivated by a title. You know what I mean by that, Jimmy? I mean, you worked back in the day with those guys, and it wasn't always a drive for a title. And Bray's character, I kind of see him in that same way.
No, that's actually a very good point, and you know, I kind of agree with everything that's being said so far. It, as far as the title goes, that makes a lot of sense that a character like that doesn't focus on championships. You know, maybe he's a guy who tries to what he believes right, wrong,
right,
and that sort of, like, for example, this whole thing with Finn Balor, and you know, obviously we were looking at something leading towards him and the Demon character, like, and that sort of stuff, but I would have, I agree with that. I would have much preferred to see this character working on, let's say, just picking a name out of anywhere, someone who's hot right now, like a Ricochet, and just focusing on him and trying to tell him that the way he approaches this industry is not the correct way, you know, and you need to be, watch out for the Fiend or something. You know what I mean? Like, his style doesn't jive or whatever the reason is, but just pick out certain superstars and, you know, as the Fiend, torment them into seeing his way, if that makes sense. Again,
It's more so mind games over title drive, I think, is kind of the way we're all kind of directing here.
You can even name a pay-per-view mind game. That would work. Oh.
Well, it's better than naming it Hell in the Cell and trying to force a Hell in the Cell into a match that doesn't necessarily require it, which is what we consistently see. One more topic before we go, guys, and let's go positive here, at least positive for me, and that is King of the Ring. I just have to say, a pleasant surprise and something I look forward to each week, and the booking has been interesting and something that makes me think and has not been bad. It's actually been good, Todd.
Yeah, I agree. I think the tournament has been a positive for the overall direction of the product. It's given sort of a sense of meaning over time, and you've got people winning matches and working towards goals, which I think is something that's a positive in wrestling in general that, you know, sometimes WWE gets away from. I think it's the quality of wrestling has largely been pretty good. I don't think it's been completely flawless. I mean, I'm not sure about the way they set up that triple threat match,
right,
in the context of a tournament. But overall, I think it's been a success, and I'm glad that they did it.
Jimmy, King of the Ring for you. Have you enjoyed it?
I've enjoyed it immensely, and a lot of the reason why is because, like in the past, the King of the Ring tournament is supposed to be designed to help elevate new stars, and I think that's what's been happening. At least what's been happening so far. And again, I agree with Todd with the fact that triple threat thing kind of doesn't sit well with me, but that's, of course, the referee in me that's talking. But anyway, it's been a surprisingly good tournament. We've had some good matches, and the guys that are going over and advancing in this tournament are a pleasant surprise for me. I still think it's heading towards a King Corbin thing, but at the same time, again, I'm enjoying it.
Jimmy's picking King Corbin. Todd, who are you picking?
Yeah, I think Corbin seems the most likely, followed by Elias and Ricochet.
All righty. Well, those are the picks. Gentlemen, we are going to leave it there for this week. Thank you both for joining me. Todd, where can people find you?
As mentioned, Pro Wrestling Torch, we do the fix every week on Wednesday, so check out our VIP section there. Also, you can find my weekly columns at TrueDog.com, and my Twitter handle is Todd Martin MMA.
And Jimmy, the Ref and Rant seem to be surfacing more and more.
Yeah, it's only on weekdays. I do a little Ref and Rant where I get a one-minute video on whatever the topic happens to be that day. Nobody is safe, and you can catch me Tuesdays, which, well, for now at least, Tuesdays,
yes.
Sportsnet, 7:30 with Aftermath, with the former Santino Marella, the Nugster, and Caroline. And, it's going to be interesting to see when they shift. I think we might be too.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, well, we look forward to that. Hope to talk to you again before then. Gentlemen, thanks so much for doing this.
Pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
We are taking a break, coming on back, and it is time for Turnbuckle Trivia. Yeah, it's going to be in the first hour this week, giving you a dose of Turnbuckle Trivia, then second hour is Meltzer in the Six-Pack Challenge. More Sunday night's main event on the way.
Hello, Gordy Levesque here. No one swings and hacks like I do. And no one struts quite like I do, too. And no one brews beer like Great Lakes do. Canuck Pale Ale. My beer, your beer. Our beer. Available in over 400 LCBO and grocery store across Ontario for only $2.80. Great Lakes Brewery. Brewed for you, Ontario.
It's time for everyone's favorite game show.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Go one-on-one and get it done. Sunday night's main event presents...
Everybody hands go up.
Turnbuckle Trivia.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there.
It is Turnbuckle Trivia time here on Sunday night's main event, and once again, we're going very international for this one today. The winner will be getting a t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com. It is your best spot on the net, and I'm guessing maybe one of these two people will choose the Bubbly t-shirt, which is the hottest seller there now, and I think of all time at Pro Wrestling Tees. Player one today is going to be Sam from Seattle. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing good, Jason. You?
I'm doing all right. Your opponent, all the way in Australia, Chris, is back to play again. Hi, Chris.
G'day, Jason. How you going?
Doing very well. All right. So, Sam and Chris, you guys are playing Rhyme Time today, and steals are involved in this game. So make sure you pay attention to all of the questions, and your answers have to rhyme. Sam, you're player one. Chris, you're player two. So let's get things going here. Sam, first question for you. WWE decides to ditch the championship belt in favor of a decorative object awarded for success. They name it after the current SmackDown champion. WWE decides to ditch the championship.
Kofi trophy.
A Kofi trophy is correct. Very good. No steal available there, Chris. But your question is, the SmackDown Women's Champion starts a newsletter that she delivers every 24 hours. What would it be called? The SmackDown...
Bailey's Daily.
Yeah, Daily Bailey. That is correct. Very good. All right. It's like I don't even need to say these questions twice. You guys are good. Sam, over to you. The WWE Raw Women's Champion retires to start her own chain of restaurants specializing in morning foods. And by morning, I mean in the AM, not as in someone died. Because that would just be weird sandwiches at a funeral. The WWE Raw Women's Champion retires to start her own chain of restaurants specializing in morning foods. What would that place be called, Sam?
I don't know. I can't think of a rhyme.
All right. There's no rhyme that he's got. So, Chris, do you have a steal here?
Would it be Becky's Brekkies?
Becky's Brekkies is correct. And Chris has the steal on that point. So is now up 2-1. And Chris, this question comes at you. The current New Japan champion assembles a faction that he nicknames after a fleet of warships. The current New Japan champion assembles a faction that he nicknames after a fleet of warships. Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that one.
That's a tough one. Sam, do you got it?
Oh, Okada Regatta?
No, the Okada Armada is what I was looking for there. Okada Armada. So that is a no-go. Sam, we are to you for this one. A spiritual place to worship the NXT UK champion. A spiritual place to worship the NXT UK champion.
Walter Alter?
Yes, that is correct. The Walter Alter for Sam. You got that point. It is tied 2-2 right now, so it comes down to this. Chris, if you get it, you win. But if you don't, then Sam has got the chance for a steal. Chris, the ROH champion is a babyface. Literally. The ROH champion is a babyface. Literally.
No, I can't get it.
All right, Sam, for the steal.
Ooh. Cole Groves?
No, the correct answer is the champion is Matt Taven, and therefore he would be Shaven Taven.
Oh, yeah.
That would be it. It is a 2-2 tie right now. And that means we go to a tiebreaker. And with the help of editing, we are just going to play closest to. The question that I pose to both of our combatants is, what is the combined age of all of the champions that we've mentioned in this game? And Sam, your answer was?
103.
And Chris, your answer was?
243.
And the correct answer is 197, which means Sam, you are 94 years away, and Chris, you are 46 years away. So we're sending a t-shirt to Australia. Congratulations, Chris.
Congrats.
Are you picking the bubbly?
Yeah, I might have a little bit of the bubbly.
A little bit of the bubbly it is. Well, that can be on its way to you. Sam, thank you for playing the game. I'm sure we're going to hear from you both once again once we get the tournament started in the new year. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
There we go. And for those of you that may be actually hearing Turnbuckle Trivia for the first time because it's in the first hour this week, this is a patron reward level. And right now I'm booking new competitors into Turnbuckle Trivia for the months of November and December. So if you want to get on board and you want your chance to win a t-shirt from ProWrestlingTees.com and also compete in the upcoming Turnbuckle Trivia tournament in the new year, then jump on board right now. Patreon.com/SNME Radio, select the Turnbuckle Trivia level, and then you will get your time to shine or lose here on Turnbuckle Trivia. Taking a break, but we got a whole nother hour to come, and it involves Dave Meltzer, it involves the six-pack challenge with Joe Aguinaldo and Bartender Dave, and it involves my take with something that is going on with AEW that I think they should be weary of. That is all still to come in the next hour. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. Well, that was just hour one, but if you want hour two, then please sign up to our Patreon. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. It's just $1 a week. You get the full two-hour show, commercial-free, and along with that, all of our bonus podcasts that include The Midweek Markout, All Elite Weekly, Sunday Morning Trivia, and Dan Lavransky's Music Show. All of that comes to you for just $1 a week. So go get it right now. Patreon.com/SNME Radio.